This is Jack Shelley, WHO's war correspondent, speaking to you from the German frontier. Just a few days ago, I spoke to you from Paris and told you I was on my way to see something of this war from a closer range. And now, after having spent the better part of 2 days in an open jeep, I'm with the 1st United States Army, that famous fighting organization of General Hodges, which has made the deepest penetration yet scored into Nazi Germany. And I'm making this report after having crossed the nearby frontier into Germany proper, where I saw what's happened to Nazi towns as the price of their resistance. As I look back on the last few weeks, I can't help being struck with the speed of my transition from the peace and safety of America to the very edge of the struggle raging just a short distance over the German border. And after all, when one moves so rapidly from one kind of existence to another so completely different from anything he's ever known, the mind just doesn't work fast enough to make all the adjustments. So I find myself looking at everything here from the point of view of a civilian back in the Middle West. And perhaps that's all of the good. For I want to be able to picture these new scenes to you very much as you would see them if you were suddenly dropped into the mud of the First Army battlefront in Western Germany. And it's a surprising thing how far you can come along the road to war before you begin to see things that suddenly jar you out of your complacence. But then I arrived here, and in the morning set out with Jack Frankish of the United Press to go into Germany, where the First Army is fighting. The driver of our jeep was a soldier from the WHO territory, by the way, Private First Class John W. Caswell of Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin. And with Caswell at the wheel, guiding our bouncing machine skillfully over the slippery, twisting roads, it still seemed to me for a little while as though I might just be taking a pleasant ride along some Middle Western highway. The country, for one thing, was so beautiful. Hills and sharply outlined valleys, and dense green woods cut by rushing little streams. It all reminded you somehow of the Ledges, or some of our other state parks in Iowa. But the traffic was a long way from being a crowd of Sunday drivers. These boys were driving tanks and heavily loaded trucks and ambulances and jeeps, all manner of military vehicles. And everywhere there was mud, splashing out from under wheels and caterpillar treads, filling the air with a fine spray that coats every vehicle and rider, forming a thick soup in every courtyard and parking area, and squishing under every foot. An Iowa farmer who remembers how his barnyard looked last spring might have some conception of it, but it isn't the good black mud we have back home. It's a yellowish, treacherous-looking substance. You can't understand this Western Front these days unless you think of yellow mud, and it's second only to the Germans as our enemy. Then suddenly we saw a sign which read, "You are now entering Germany." And in a second, we'd passed over a blasted-out strip through those famous concrete tank barriers called dragon's teeth, sticking up out of the ground in a zigzag pattern. They were tinted green that matched the landscape, but otherwise, they looked exactly like the pictures you saw. The outer garden was a straight line, tracked by the 1st U.S. Army. From then on, you knew you were really in a war zone. And as the jeep bounced along, you saw here and there the ruins of perfectly concealed pillboxes, blasted open as the 1st Army advanced into Germany. After that, before you knew it, you'd reached Aachen, the focal point of bitter fighting for many days, and the biggest German city yet to fall. All of us, of course, have heard about the destruction of Aachen, but let me tell you this. No words, not even a picture, can ever tell you what Aachen is like. Remember, Aachen used to be a city of about 160,000 population, roughly about the size of Des Moines, and it was built after the continental fashion, with practically every building, homes, as well as business structures, made of brick or stone. But often today is a pile of ruins. Building after building crumbled into rubble. Crazy piles of twisted steel and broken stone, crowding right up to narrow traffic lanes cleared out by our bulldozers, and loose wires running aimlessly through the ruins. The general outlines of some of the houses remain, but even those are gashed beyond repair by shells and bombs, their blown-out windows staring blankly, and draperies streaming through those windows and whipping in the chilly winds. I don't believe there's a single building in Aachen that escaped our guns and planes. It's as if all of Des Moines, even the fashionable homes on the edge of the city, had been pounded into a shambles. Of the 160,000 people who used to live there, perhaps some 10,000 are still poking dizzily through the ruins. Where they find enough shelter to keep out the wind and rain, I can't imagine. But this is the price the Germans have had to pay for fighting a senseless battle in obedience to Hitler's orders. Aachen is probably the biggest city in this war to be reduced to complete ruins, and I don't see how it can possibly be rebuilt unless the whole pile of rubble is cleared away and a brand new city erected. Our jeep went on to other captured German cities, all of them smaller, but many nearly as completely wrecked as Aachen. Among them were Stolberg and Eschweiler, the latter taken only recently in our most forward showings in Germany. We stopped at command posts and public relations offices, some of them in partly ruined buildings, and a group of us correspondents arrived at one of the forward points just in time to have lunch, amid a scene that was so much like a movie or a stage setting for a war drama that you almost had to pinch yourself to make sure you weren't play-acting. We ate a mighty appetizing meal by the flickering light of candles in part of a semi-wrecked building, while outside and not far away, artillery batteries thundered. Among those at the table was a former Des Moines man, Harold Benny, the gray-haired war correspondent for the New York Times. And to complete the almost theatrical atmosphere, there was also with us Lee Carson, the famous woman war correspondent for International News Service, who is one of the few girl reporters who really is as beautiful as such characters always are in the movies. We made a good many other stops on this first trip of mine to get the feel of the front, and we saw where German shells had been falling only an hour or so before. We visited officers of several divisions, and at one point I met a former Davenport, Iowa man, Lieutenant Colonel Robert Evans. Colonel Evans is a staff officer of a division whose record is one of the most brilliant of this entire war. And everywhere we went, the story was the same. A bitter German resistance, aided by favorable terrain and bad weather. The closer to the front you get, the less you find of easy optimism. There's none of this talk that the war is going to be won by Christmas, or the Germans are going to crack up any minute. On the contrary, it's the sober opinion of well-informed officers here that the German army has been able to pull itself out of a hole and gather new strength in a remarkable way. These men see more and more evidence that the so-called intuition of Adolf Hitler is no longer directing Germany's defense. But on the contrary, the Nazi army is being bossed in this bitter struggle by professional German officers of the old school. And it's admitted they're employing their men and their machines with a maximum of skill and intelligence, that they're selling every meter of ground at the highest possible price. And don't you folks back home forget for a moment that this price is being paid by American boys, boys from Iowa, the Middle West, and all over our country. They're the ones who are floundering through this eternal mud, huddling in foxholes filled with water, dying along the edges of swollen streams. Here in these beautiful Hansel and Gretel forests of pine, it isn't any fairy tale that's being enacted. It's a grim, bitter story with shrapnel bursting into pretty trees and raining steel on boys who are getting lost forever in these woods. And from where I sit right now, it looks to me as though it's going to be quite a while before anyone can even begin to sit back and say it's over. There's a big job and a tough job and a costly job still to be done. Make up your mind to that. This is Jack Shelley speaking from the German frontier and returning you to WHO in Des Moines. Hello, NBC. That's the end of my piece in the First Army. We'll appreciate a reception report both on my recording, which is to be air expressed, WHO Des Moines,